you know, this year's level of morph seems a lot higher than in past years. You know, our, we know, you know, Steve Lee's reported that U of I's reporting for mortalities is better than in previous years. They didn't necessarily report all the mortalities off the Val 15 return pool drain trash rack. They reported primarily sample mortalities as opposed to facility mortalities, and you know, some of that was due to the very degraded state that they were retrieving these fish in, and they were moved directly to the Val 15 return pool drain. And it sounds like their raking effort is also better now than it has been in the past, and that might be due to some of the modifications we made and the way water flows through the area now. It's quite possible, but you know, the need to rake deep is more prevalent now to keep that area clear. The bypass flume was removed back in
the extension.
The extension that was back in June, I think. July. I wrote it down here. Hold on one second. It was 18 June, yeah. And so at that time, that was the big, you know, it was a couple weeks prior to that, we started getting the mortalities, the reports, and I think the first one was on the 3rd of June. And, you know, we all had a lot of shad at that time. And it sounds like after, hey, Ann. Glad you made it through.
Sorry about that.
Here's an agenda for you. We were just kind of going over some of the observations from this year. And when those bypass flumes were removed, you know, the reporting that we were getting was that fish were fighting in the pipe, you know, sound like near the end of the pipe. And I'm not clear as if, you know, that had been happening through the duration. It seemed like it was more around the time that when we removed the bypass pipes. And once that was dewatered, Bonneville, you guys can comment on this if you want, but Ben reported that there was 1,500 to 2,000 shad in that area, just outside the rail pool. So, you know, it was a fairly substantial shad run this year. Does our baffle create a condition in there that shad are having trouble egressing out of the area at night? You know, should we do something with the baffle? And, you know, how much of a contribution to mortality is shad buildup in the area? I'm not sure. But the bypass pipes were removed and then we continued to have mortalities. So, yeah, it's not real apparent where they're coming from or why.
One thing that was noticed, I believe, was the bypass pipe got more submerged during that whole shad operation.
Yeah.
It appeared as though more shad were getting trapped in that trash rack, causing less flow to go through it, or Steve can talk to this, but it increased the water elevation in that area.
Yeah, rear of shad.
Yes. Shad. Yeah. And U of I reported in Critfic that they, you know, regularly rake. You know, it takes them about an hour in the morning and an hour at the end of the sample day. The access hatch to the trash rack is covered by the anesthetic tank, the second anesthetic tank. So we were, you know, kicking around ideas for trying to improve the, you know, raking effort and making it a little bit easier for those guys, because it is strenuous and they have to pull them all the way out onto the walkway grating. And so we can
and
talk about
one thing that's changed with the baffle is that now we have our higher velocity not at the surface but down, you know, we have a higher velocity down low than we did before.
Yeah.
Which means there's more fish trapped down lower because they got a great
volume. Yeah, if there's dead shad, they're probably down low.
Yeah. Hey, you made it.
Nope.
Here's an agenda, Jeff.
Okay, thanks.
So it seems like, you know, things to discuss are, you know, whether or not we should reinstall the bypass pipes, you know, and how important we think those are, or what we can do there, and then also hydraulically, you know, the baffle. It seems to me that we would want to, if we can, investigate how to, you know, lift that thing up at the end of the sample day. I'm not sure whether that's the cause of all the shad in the area, but it seems like a lot of fish are, you know, falling back into the lab, including lamprey, and all the dead lamprey on the trash rack are bypassed fish, bypassed through the, either through the main ladder, or they're going through the collection area at the end of the sample day and up through the half ice harbor ladder.
I just want to make the point too that a lot of the fish that we're getting out there are severely decomposed. So I guess my question is it really an increase in mortality? Or are we just collecting them or noticing them now?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, reporting is better.
I mean, is there really something that needs fixed, or are we just...
I'm not sure.
How many dead fish are we seeing on the picket leads down below at the diversion into the...
Well, I think they found one lamprey, as I recall. Yeah. But it doesn't seem like there's that many on the picket leads. You know, most of the fish that they're retrieving off the trash rack in the lab, you know, are coming in between, you know, when they finish sampling for the day and the beginning to the next sample day. You know, according to Steve Lee, they're picking most of those off at the beginning of the day. And at the end of the day, there's, you know, there's been a few, but not that many. So, you know, are they bypassed fish? Are they, you know, impacted in such a way that they're, you know, bypassed through the flume, that they're, you know, there's some delayed mortality there, and then they end up, you know, or are they bypassed around the facility? That's where the uncertainty for me lies. I'm not sure.
Did any of those have pit tags in them? Unsampled fish, but with pit tags, say as juveniles, and you could see where they were last detected through the ladder, possibly giving you a clue.
These, you know, marks and tags, you know, there's a lot of...
I think the ones that were tagged were ours.
Oh, or all of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are only, you know, a couple.
Like three or four.
Yeah. So...
So you're not seeing them on the picket leads down there. I mean, it would seem like if you were having a lot of mortality occurring in the ladder that you'd see them there as well.
Yeah. Not that I've heard
However, of. I mean, I don't know of anyone possibly going out there and looking at the picket leads for mortalities. I mean, they go out there and they raise the picket leads at the end of the sample day.
Yeah, if they're not floating, you might not see them.
Right. I mean, there's a substantial amount of water going through the ladder right there. You're not going to necessarily see. Another thing I wanted to point out was the fish that they're reporting after the sample day. I'm not necessarily certain that those fish died during the sample day, because at times I would go in there and ask them, be like, do you guys have any fish today? And they're like, well, we haven't raked yet. They don't always rake at the beginning of the
day.
Some days, if there's not a lot of fish that's affecting the water level, they won't rake until they're done.
Okay.
So that could be fish from the previous night.
Yeah.
Or sequential days.
Sounds like it might be beneficial to come up with some kind of standard cleaning procedure, just so we can compare from year to year, because it sounds like in the previous years we didn't maybe have as much intense raking of that trash rack, and this year maybe we've done more, but we don't know how much more.
Well, the other one,
we could say, like, we're going to rake first thing in the morning, and we're going to rake as soon as we're done, and we're going to go all the way down to the bottom every single time and report every fish, or just salmonids and lamprey, or something like that. Some kind of standard comparison that we can make.
It could be that the slack water down below before just held the fish throughout the floor area. And then now that we have the baffle in there, it mixes it up and more of them end up on the trash rack.
It could be.
Yeah. So perhaps they rotted enough on the
floor. They decompose fast,
That they just pass right through. And I think it's possible, especially with the flow that's going through there, that quite a few fish probably would come in the exit channel. Fall back into it. And, you know, in the old days, we used to drop that bulkhead
you know, like 18 inches or something like that during our shad mode at the time. And I think it's just, you know, shad were more surface oriented and, you know, help keep some of the shad out of the facility. And then it also would, you know, slow down the flow through the lab. So I think flow is part of an issue. But I could imagine a lot of, if there are fish that die on the main fish ladder, I could see them, you know, being swept into the AFF.
Yeah.
Yeah, but out of the main fish ladder, if we had a lot of fish dying out there, we would see them at the count station, we'd see them up at the picket leads there, we'd see them at the drain valve or the adjusting valve. I mean, that's always getting plugged up with shad.
Okay.
You know, if you saw that number of fish dying, that's not only be a, if that was just a small portion of the fish that's going with the entire fish run that's going through, we'd be up to our ears in dead fish out somewhere else. So, I mean, I would assume it'd become noticeable at some point. I mean, I know that valve plugs pretty regularly, you know, especially during how shad runs. So
build up head on the picket lead.
What's going on? Yeah. That's what happens. But, you know, add up at the count station. I mean, you would see, okay, so they don't pick up at the, they don't go on the picket leads there, but you'd see dead fish coming through the count window. I mean, it's
right.
No reason why it's just mm-hmm. that one section of ladder. So I don't know. Somewhere it's accumulating in the AFF.
What do you guys think the major stressor is there?
Well, we removed those flumes. I mean, and that was because of shad. It almost seems to me like if we can fix that shad issue downstream in the baffle, we won't have to remove those flumes. And then that might fix the mortality problem possibly, and also fix the shad problem so it won't build up head and create stress there with the overloading. So it almost seems to me that we might be able to solve it just by getting those shad out of there, because we can keep our flumes on them.
Mm-hmm.
You mean that extension on
that extension, yeah.
Pipe?
Yeah, because we had to take those off because of the
because elevation. it's so flat, and we were getting mm-hmm. salmon stuck in there as well.
Well, it's because the water backed up.
Yeah, that's
right. It got backed up into the flume.
Yeah.
It got too deep.
So if we can, if, you know, there's not much room to play with there to change the slope.
Yeah, we were looking at possibly going back to where first transitions around, because it comes out real steep there. And mm-hmm. We don't need that much steepness initially. It's just not a lot of headroom to work, but it might be possible to go back to the transition and come back, you know,
realign
with a more uniform slope.
But in general, anytime you start looking at that, you end up right in the corner. You're dumping them right in the corner is where it always seems to, when you start playing with the slopes and the angles coming out of there, you end up trying to dump them in the corner, and I don't believe that's where we want them.
No, if we could get them a little bit of around the corner, seems like the better location.
Well, that's why we need to flatten the slope higher up so we could go further downstream.
We could look at flattening that slope and trying to, so that it ends up definitely above the water level.
Well, like a
in
foot.
There.
Yeah,
like a foot up there, and then try to put more water down that flume.
Down the flume?
Yeah, plumb in some.
That was another thing. Like we tried to do that for a couple of days, and the issue was that you have increased flow in there, the anesthetic tank overflows.
Yeah, we need a 45 on the end of the pipe to shoot it down.
It needs to be plumbed into
that's
the pipe itself.
Not that difficult.
Yeah.
I guess the thing is, does the pipe provide enough volume?
The bypass pipe?
No, the auxiliary water to the...
Oh, probably not. You're probably dumping with a garden hose or something
like
that.
The inch in diameter or something.
Yeah, you probably need maybe a 2-inch line or something like that in there. I mean, a good flush flow, you know, kind of like we do.
It isn't much, right?
Kind of like we do at the flush flow at the end of the juvenile fish monitoring facility.
Can't remember how much that's quite bad.
I know, but not quite that. It's like a 3-inch line.
Yeah, that's like 10 CFS. Get much.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
But we probably would like CFS.
Yeah, we'd like enough flow to push them out.
Yeah.
You know, not enough flow to give them not enough flow to give them purchase in there.
Right.
Turn around, run with it, but enough flow to push them out.
So keeping it lower than halfway up the caudal fin or somewhere.
Oh yeah, there, yeah, somewhere just on the, you know, just
a couple inches
in there, but good enough flow. So it's kind of a fine line, and that should, I mean, that should
force them out.
Reduce that, you know, flush them out when they're on, as long as they're on their sides.
So bypass flume extension higher off the water. Increased auxiliary water to the bypass flume, better shad management.
Yeah, the shad issue, I mean, I'm kind of curious, and I'm asking the engineers, would there be a way to make an overflow section on that baffle, maybe a small overflow section even for the shad, because they prefer that over the orifice flow.
But we could make the baffle right where it doesn't go all the way to the surface. Or
right, or even a section on it.
Kind of weird.
Kind of a weird.
Okay, so
what's our head differential across that baffle?
It's not much. I haven't measured it, but I didn't see it. It wasn't an obvious difference.
But the reason for the baffle is to slow down the surface velocity going to the track.
That's the reason, right.
So if you have it open on top, then you got more surface velocity.
Right, but not as much as we had, so I'm like thinking maybe there's a compromise there.
Yeah, we'd have to, you know, where we'd leave it open would be probably over on the other side.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying. Yeah.
And block the part that runs along the braille side.
Right.
And maybe it's only 12 or 18 inches wide or something like that, maybe.
Right. See what happens, see if they go through it.
6 or 8 inches deep.
Now, that'll mean that we'll continue to have this recirculation, but if that's not an issue, then that's okay.
Well, it depends on how strong the circulation it creates. So, I mean, the other option is, like you said, try to figure out a way to remove it, make it permanent, remove it at night, or lift it up, or
or we could do both.
Rotate it up out of the...
We might find that we find a pretty decent condition when we raise it out for both types of passage, because we've covered the panels, so according to my measurements, the flow did go down. And so we may find that it's not a bad situation for both types of passages. Something we haven't experimented with.
My concern is that shad don't really move at night. In fact, they more fall back at night.
Mm.
They, for whatever reason. Mm.
So we would be relying on, you know, the end of the sample day, approximately 3
yeah,
o'clock
we have half a day there,
to
right?
You know, into the evening, I guess. Hopefully, get them out of there. But
and I've not seen it in Bonneville, but I'm just going on guys that are talking on the East Coast. I've gotten the documented shad going into ladders early in the morning and then afternoons backing out.
Okay.
So, but I haven't seen that. But nobody looks at shad out of Bonneville anyway. So we don't know. Maybe there might be several hundred thousand backing out the ladder, but whatever. So maybe if we can look at seeing what sort of that we have an escapement through it. But I like the idea of can we prevent them? Because if they are falling back in the late afternoon or at night, you know, can we, when you're done, you know, can we reduce that area that they're falling back? Can we shut the gate a little bit? The very, you know, we all know they're very surface oriented. You know, can we drop the gate down, you know, 12 inches or something like that, or 18 inches. It still provides enough flow in the ladder, you know, through the trap. But
yeah, are they dropping the bulkhead at night at all, or is it just
the upstream one?
Yeah,
I don't think so. You guys would probably know. I think the reason for the raising, we raised and lowered before, and then I think lamprey were getting in the channel. As you raise them lower, you pinch lamprey.
Yeah. Yeah, and when they were raising it out of the water, lamprey were being, they were stuck to the bulkhead.
Yeah, so
we had a...
Yeah, so I'm wondering is if you put it down to 18 inches or however far and just leave it that way. And it would, you know, reduce flow into the facility, and then it could also keep shad out, is a thought.
Yeah.
You mean for the operation and just leave it down?
Mm-hmm.
You'll definitely stop shad passage.
You may want to see if shad would back in great numbers, you can flip it to nighttime videos for rain, for anything.
That's true.
Current lighting, so I can ask the reviewer to stop and talk if he notices a lot of shad moving back in night, but it hasn't stood out.
Yeah, I would think they would bring it to somebody's attention if they were just... that's my only concern, is once you... If you leave that gate down during when you're operating the trap, then shad definitely will not be able to get out. Not that we get a ton through the trap anyway, but we do get... Yeah, we do get quite a bit into the trap, so then we wouldn't have a way out.
Right, way for them to get out. So...
But maybe, I mean, even if we shut it at night, maybe we don't have a way for them to get out anyway, so backing down the ladder when we drain down the holding pool, right? That's the only way out for them, is to back down the ladder. So, but I mean, it'd be worth a test if we think that's where we're getting the shad from.
Put the bulkhead down
after, you know, kind of put it in a half operation mode or something like that. Because you still got distance that steelhead and salmon can get out of there, right? It's still orifice.
I'm not sure how deep that is there.
I would confirm
that. I think
it
is about, do you recall how deep that is there?
Yeah. 4 feet?
5 feet.
I think. Yeah.
Right.
It's not as deep as the main ladder, but it's close to. Mm. And 5 feet was the depth.
If we put that bulkhead down, are we going to be increasing velocity through that area?
Velocity would go up through the bulk.
Through passage.
Yeah, because you'd build up a little bit of head differential.
Probably not too significant, though.
Be easy enough to figure out. It shouldn't, well. Yeah, it will go up. It will go up somewhat.
Yeah.
Depends how much we feed in that ladder in there. Yeah.
Because it did reduce the flow a little bit when we were messing around with it.
Yeah.
Because we still, because we were getting too much flow. That helped a little bit. I can't remember. I think it dropped to like 10% or something like that, if I recall. But we reduced the area probably more than that.
Right. We're planning to get velocity measurements again in the fall here. I remember we didn't get a profile after we installed the plating on the bottom. Is that correct?
Well, we didn't get one with the baffle out and the plating on the bottom.
That's right. Maybe when we
Which you
back
probably want to know if we're certainly want to know if we're going to consider raising the baffle out at night or something like that.
So we'll try to schedule that here at some point. So it sounds like we should investigate reinstalling the pipe, additional water. I'm keeping it higher off the surface. What about shad management? Raising the baffle out of the water versus, an opening on one side, and then the trash rack.
Well, I don't know if it's versus. I think you could do both. I think you should raise it no matter what. I personally think it should be raised at the end of the day and let whatever shad go through. I think that's probably a smart idea.
There's more operational flexibility.
Yeah.
In previous years, you didn't have the shaft build up like you're having this year.
Yeah. So that's why I'm thinking that if we raise it, it'll be like previous years, and things will clear out.
But if they don't move at night, do they have much of a window where they still move?
Well, we have half a day, too, is the thing. I think for the other noon or whatever, or two.
Yeah.
Or
used
to
3
o'clock. Oh. So there's still on.
And then the ability to rake them off the trash rack. We had talked about when we went out there, we had talked about, you know, maybe making it, maybe adding a feature where there's a hinge or something at the top, so when they pull them up, they don't have to pull them out onto the walkway grading. They can just encourage them to go, you know, at the surface of the water, right through behind it. Dell 15 or 14. I know Steve Sipe was looking at that a little bit.
There were several concerns about if you do rake them, then you won't see any mortise. So are we hiding salmon problems?
Right, you might just rake the salmon right through too, or lamprey.
So how shallow would you need to be in order to be able to see and
right.
Would it be effective?
Anybody have thoughts on that?
What if you just made the opening bigger that's in the grading right there? To get access to the entire... Because, you know, I kind of have to, like, reach an angle to get the other side.
Yeah.
If you made it a little bit bigger, put in a handrail or something, got a rake that's made for that trash rack, just reach it a little bit easier.
It'd be a lot easier for me, but isn't that right under equipment? Would you have to move stuff out of the way to do that?
The second anesthetic tank's in the way.
Yeah, the second anesthetic.
It's not there all the time.
Is it there going to shadow?
It depends on how many groups are in there sampling. It's just perfect. You know.
Maybe that's just a restriction of the AFF. You can't put anything there because we need to be able to clean that.
Yeah.
We were having them remove it at the end of the day. I think they, like U of I, likes to have a second anesthetic tank.
They do.
Yeah,
they prefer to, you know, work out of that one.
Yeah, that's my understanding. They move it out of the way.
It's not terribly difficult to hook it up to the crane and put it on the upper level at the end of the day. Or takes time to move the tank.
So is, would having better access be the first step, or would you want to do more than that? Or, I guess, would that be enough for this year? So that would mean you're breaking them up onto the deck?
I think
a better access would probably be a good first step.
Yeah, that's a good first step.
And for, you know, right now, I don't know how much of an issue it really is because, you know, shad are gone.
Yeah.
And so they're only raking up whatever, you know, sound line is and lamprey can show up.
And then the other question that brings up is, so now you got 1,500 shad on the deck. I don't think we'll get that far, but... If you got the shad on the deck, do you want to run them back through 15, or do you? So, would you want another access to drop them back down in? Or?
Well, that's where they put them. Is under the valve 15 return pool drain. There is
a small access there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, they still are moving them up onto that walkway. Maybe
put something temporary that allows them to slide it into the. Trough or something.
Grill with some charcoal.
What's that?
Grill with some charcoal.
So on track with Andy's comment, I'm wondering if we should put an FPP protocol in there for the AFF or racking or raking during shad periods. A certain period of time, some consistent protocol that we can, you know, have some consistency and expect similar results year after year.
Yeah, just so we can compare. Because right now it's like, well, we think we raked more, but...
Right. I just don't know what it would look like, because I don't know what they go through, but what it would actually say.
Yeah.
But be easy to throw in there for the next year's FPP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Steve Lee reported that, yeah, that U of I hasn't been in there in a few years, but mm-hmm. they thought that they were raking, their effort has gone up.
Right.
You know, when the significant numbers of shad were present, he was talking about, you know, they were raking an hour beforehand.
Out of necessity, because they didn't want to create so much head.
And the ability to get at them when the sample tank is in place, you know, is non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything that can be done to encourage shad out of the area while they're sampling to keep the water level in the lab in criteria? You know, if that thing's making a weir over the course of one sample day.
That's how we could set the criteria as a head criteria, possibly. Like a 6-inch or less, or I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, it's a narrow range of...
Yeah.
We could put a stat gauge in there and see it get up close to the water.
See, I think rather than, I don't know, I'd rather tie it into to a staff gauge that you can read rather than a raking effort and somebody's idea that they got 1,500 shad off of it.
Right.
Because is it 1,200 or is it 1,500 or
so it's saying it has to be in as to start
you
operation.
Could, we could easily put a staff gauge in there and we know, you know, we know what it should be clean.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything is set, we know how much that trash rack will... what the water level in there should be when it's clean, and you can kind of relate, you know, how fast it's plugging or whatnot by, and give it an upper end that not to exceed this depth, because you start to submerge the pipes.
We probably need feedback from the bottom up people as what's a good upper end.
What's your range? Right. You probably have 6 inches of
freeboard
in there.
It's less than that, isn't it?
Is it? But I mean, you might be able to do. I mean, in addition to whatever you're going to sample off of the.
I guess it depends on where we end up with these pipes, too. How much range?
True. We intended to have it 6 inches above the water, and because of just the way the geometry worked out, ended up actually the bottom of the pipe was touching the water under normal operation. But at that, you know, under normal operation, it wasn't backed up into it, but once you start piling up shad, that changed.
Going back to what elevation do you rake at? Maybe that needs to be determined over one shad run, as in water level went up 3 inches and we raked out 2 shad, but it went up 4 inches and we raked out 500 shad or something. I don't know. So you kind of get an indication of what inches on the staff gauge equals what number of shad. Maybe it's not something we can decide.
Yeah, I will, like, percent, like, how much it's plugged.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of. I think what's going to control this kind of a pipe at the end of the bypass pipe at the end, because we don't want to be interfering with that.
Right.
You know, so when it's affecting the flow out of the bypass pipe, it's definitely too high.
Yeah.
You know, now, operationally, you can go out to the project and they'd say, well, we want it 2 inches lower than that. It gives us, you know, enough time to rake it or something like that.
Sure.
So we should have some, be able to come
facts
up with
facts or safety. Yeah.
Some boundary in there that says we can get, you know, we should be able to operate within this
range.
And then eventually we'll have some idea of how many shad or how much occlusion occurs to it, you know.
Because I'm told actually in previous years, Crific would actually throttle valve 14 to slow down the velocity on the surface, but that's because we didn't have, you know, that pipe extension.
Yeah. You mean valve 15?
Valve 15.
Yeah.
Keep that mixed up.
Yeah.
The other thing might be, you know, if we're going to look at modifying the baffle either as a permanent installation or something that's got to be, you know, raised out of the water in the evening or after sampling, or, you know, if we're going to cut a slot in the
I would suggest that slot, we have the option of closing it.
That's a good idea.
Just in case we decide whether we like it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, that's a good idea. And I would say, I don't know.
Of course, I'm giving, it's all easy for me to suggest that.
Well, you could even have just a guide slot with a board.
Yeah,
I'm
buddy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Old-fashioned.
I definitely do it when we still have a wooden.
Yeah.
With a wooden thing in there rather than doing steel, and I can put guide slots and things in wood a whole lot easier than modifying steel. So, just till we get it, you know, maybe we make it. Now that's a good idea, because then we could almost oversize that.
Yeah.
That slot a little bit and find out, you know, does it need to be 8 inches deep? Does it 6 inches deep? Because the bigger, the deeper we make that, the more it's going to give us
circulation.
So would you, I mean, now having the ability to close it, would you want to do one on each side in case you do get an eddy, then maybe you could counteract it?
Well, at some point here, we just structurally don't have a slot there. Yeah. We got a couple boards sticking out there, and a whole lot of holes. So, just initially, I would agree with Steve. I think it should be on the other side because the jet comes along and comes hard across that.
It hits hard on the braille side.
So I would make it.
No, I'm surprised that with the baffle as we have it, that we have more flow downstream of the baffle on the other side. That kind of baffles me. Part of it is because the baffle probably wasn't, pun intended.
Yeah.
Part of it is the baffle wasn't quite, perpendicular to the channel, and that might be a factor. But it didn't make a lot of hydraulic sense to me that we had more velocity on the other side.
Well, is it the energy coming off that corner because the water's going to make that bend, that sharp 90-degree bend, and maybe it's the thou wax swapping?
The highest energy is on the braille side, coming around the corner.
Right.
And so I thought, I'd expect the velocity to be a little bit higher on that side. But then it goes, apparently the baffle deflects that surface flow over to the other corner, and then it's got to deflect, the wall deflects it back. So maybe that's what's doing it. It's hard to say.
I just know when you said you take a channel, you cut it straight, and in a few years you're going to have this like meandering channel, and it seems like the energy comes off the edge and it swaps over the thigh leg over the center of the rear leg, goes to the opposite side, and
it does tend to do it in natural channels. It sort of reverberates. I don't think that's that wouldn't be my explanation on this, but that's
not in that short of distance.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe a little longer. If we had a lot longer, it might swap from side to side.
That's our problem with this whole thing, is we don't have enough distance. If we had more distance, then the jet would diffuse itself.
I don't know. Maybe you can look at that baffle design, like you said.
I was planning to make a little bit more porosity on the braille side just to try to counteract that circulation.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, a little bit higher porosity on the braille side.
Play around with it.
But
initially, my thought would be some sort of slot or surface slot on the far side away from the braille just to see how it goes. And it could be almost just a surface orifice. On the other hand, I don't want too much flow in there. I really don't want salmon leaping at, to entice them to leap at that. I think you're just going to end up with a whole lot of problems.
So what would be a maximum depth you would put and width would you suggest?
Offhand, I'm thinking 12 or 16, maybe 18 inches the most width, and the depth of what a shad need to run. 6 inches?
When we do our shad criteria, do we actually go with warhead, but that's to reduce velocity?
Streaming
flow.
We get streaming flow, and you develop 1.3,
right.
1.4, 1.5 foot of depth over the weirs.
Right.
So
I just wonder how you match that velocity or something.
You won't use conditions. I would think six inches
would be enough. I mean,
So I kind of oversize it.
Maybe a
foot deep.
And then you have 2 foot boards.
By 18.
Yeah.
Two boards, one's a 6-inch, one's a foot.
And then we can add stuff in there if we need to.
Yeah.
Make it smaller or bigger. I don't want to go in there and cut it again.
So we're talking about cutting the existing baffle, or are we talking about the future permanent?
Well, if we can, I'd like to test it with the existing before we
get out. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think so, too.
Do we have enough shad in there to test it?
Well, not this year.
So we'd have to wait till next spring. So we would hold off on doing the permanent baffle design then?
That would be my recommendation. I mean, I don't want to, Because I assume you're going to make a permanent one out of steel or aluminum or something like that. And
so right. I don't want to do this in 1 work period to get it done, but see your point. But the one that's out there was just regular old dug fir
4x4.
4x4. Is it holding up all right, or is it already showing?
Looks like.
Looks all right.
So far, so good.
I guess the other concern I have is these are 4x4s that span the whole length. Yeah. You cut the top foot. And how do you keep that one in from just wanting to break off? Right now, there's nothing. So you have to come up with some way. Whereas a steel plate, you could do something out of steel that could have that cut out.
Yeah.
That's just sitting here just for 2 seconds thinking about that.
Yeah, and I think, so what we were talking about briefly was a steel perforated one, because Steve was looking at the flow lines and everything. So if we did a steel perforated baffle there, we can do the 24 by 24 opening and have the ability to block it more or less, so we can do some tuning.
Yeah. I mean, that would be an advantage having it in steel.
Sure.
I was kind of thinking that same thing. How are we going to support the wood?
Right.
It doesn't make it any easier.
Chopping off the top three boards. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to hold those. Yeah. Just go away.
You have to put a column
without
in there.
Something.
You'd have to put in, yes.
Some kind of support up the middle, but just wondered if it's
probably be easier to do it in steel.
And get a more permanent solution, and we can play with those, and maybe they just get left wherever we all like it.
Yeah. And we can weld it in place afterwards.
Right.
Or whatnot once we. Yeah.
There's always a chance we do the steel permanent or aluminum permanent solution. We still don't like it.
Well, I mean, how expensive will it be? It won't be that expensive, will it, to do that?
What do you think, Steve?
If we do it with that thought in mind up front, that it may be movable, we can make it fairly cheaply, yeah.
Okay. Good.
And so we're also thinking having a lifting point on it and a crane above it or something.
Some
so
hand crane, right?
Well, so I was just thinking about that here. Right now there's the issue of getting out anywhere near that, right? To get out there is kind of an evolution.
I mean, an auto crane is definitely going to be easier on the just one of those 2-ton hoist, push the button thing, but I don't know if that's in the budget.
Jeff's got the money for that.
Use the existing bridge crane.
Yeah, okay.
But you still got to get out there to hook it up.
You got to attach it.
Yeah, you just have to put bridle on a tether or something. Or
bridle on a tether.
And then run the crane back over to the middle and raise
that
it.
Sounds like it work.
But you just leave it attached and then raise it up as you see fit? Can that work?
It's kind of right under the
curve. What's that?
You can't leave it attached to that bridge crane because they're always doing
it.
But can you tether it off?
Yeah.
But I think whenever we were out there last, it almost looked like all those flumes might be right over top of it.
That's what I'm struggling with.
Sure. But there is an opening. There are openings through there. Otherwise, I couldn't take measurements between them. The question is, are they centered?
Yeah, is that baffle, which is located based on where there are supports on the braille pole. The other one was concrete, but it was locked in at that braille pole side, so we can't move it.
No.
If we had to move it several feet, then it was not going to work out right. So is that clear space up above us, or do we have a flume or pipe in the way?
Well, I think there was the flume. Yeah, that's something we got to revisit. But actually, if we're gonna fix the flume, I would make it a little higher in that area anyway.
But that vertical doesn't help me. It's horizontal. I think the flume goes right across the top of your brake is my issue.
It does, but there's enough room to raise it.
But I got to reach from above.
Right, but I think there's openings between the flumes.
Okay.
So that's we have to work that out.
It's just another real estate issue.
It's a very tight place.
Yeah.
That was my first one. Let's take
you. Yeah. So rotate it across the top. Yeah,
the only problem there is locking it.
Complication.
Right.
Down. Although with the steel and the baffle, it might be.
There's probably more load on the crane though, doing that against the. Because you want to go against the flow for better locking, because it came against the backer, so the flow is pushing against the backer, but that would put a lot of load on the crane.
But see, if it's heavy enough, and a lot of gates are, just mm-hmm. they're just. They're heavy enough to go through the guides. They're just designed to lock in. you know, as it goes in, and you unpin it, or and then you lift it from back and just pivots up and lock it. But
right,
that's
I think that
a
was
concerned
though. That crane is, what's that crane rating?
It's 2 ton.
2 ton?
Seems right.
So are you saying going with the flow then?
The bridge crane?
Yeah.
It could. It could.
5 or 10.
I think it is.
Yeah, I almost wondered.
I almost
think
it's 10.
Yeah, I think it's 10.
We shouldn't be in that range.
Wouldn't think so.
We'll have to get that.
We'll have to see. Like
yeah.
See how all the, how
yeah.
All the cranes
line.
Yeah,
maybe prefer
to
look this straight up for complication's sake, but.
If you hinge up things, you're going to end up having to have cables that are in the water at the bottom.
Yeah.
That are going up through the water. Is that an issue? You're tangled up in that. When it's in the down position, all the cables in the water.
I think it'd be less, you know, taking the whole thing out would be the first most preferred. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have to leave it in the water with cables, I think we need to revisit it.
Okay.
You know, if that's necessary. I can see this getting more and more complex.
The simpler the better. We'd like to just be able to pull it vertically through some slots.
Vertically,
and
yes.
Yeah.
Right. Just move the flumes.
Then if that doesn't
well,
work,
I think
we
there might be room, but we got to get in there once the water and take measurements.
Then if that doesn't work, we can look at a leaf gate. You guys like those things. I don't know. We'll figure out. I think the preferred thing is be able to just pull it out.
Right. I think
and
that's easier all the way around.
And
it's
then,
just a matter of whether we can
if we
accomplish
can clear
that with what's already
what's
done.
What the geometry is.
If we have to go with something else, then we probably all should go out and take a look at at what either hinge it or is there another way of
right.
of getting it in there.
Right.
Well, it makes me wonder if this area downstream of this baffle isn't actually better than releasing those unsampled fish in the high velocity of the ladder, because we don't see any mortality hardly of the sampled fish. So it might actually be better to not flume them into the ladder and flume them behind the baffle. I don't know, what do you guys think? Would there be too many fish in that
water? You got a real estate issue first off, because if you got to drop
it's a long, not a drop, but a short distance.
Yeah, okay.
That's where the drawback.
Unless you want to drop them, I don't know.
Unless you want to do a bunch of
coils.
Well,
I mean, you used to. They drop straight
downward. Back to the original.
Back to the original.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because
yeah.
It is under whatever it is, 5 or 6 feet deep.
Yeah, that's true. There's plenty of depth to receive the fish.
Yeah.
We'll see if you guys have a real estate issue with lifting it. Maybe we can revisit that if we have to.
That would make it a lot easier. I don't know exactly where that lined up.
That'd be something I'd want
to
run.
We'll have to go back. We'll have to go out first.
I'd want to run that by
take
Gary.
A lot of measurements and
talk to Gary about that first, because he
might have to
more ideas on
raise
that.
The flume a little bit. Well, we'd want to raise the flume if we're going to try to end up at a higher invert, and hopefully a little further down the corner. So we got to go back to that original transition and make it not so steep. And that first bend is very steep as well. So that might buy us some more space to raise it.
Again,
but the only thing I'm hearing is you're talking like it's the bypass pipes that's in the way of this thing, but we also have that flume to the unsteady tank.
Okay. Is that right over?
That's
the name.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure which one's in the way. I'm just saying there's other things.
There's a lot of stuff in there, and when you start doing lifting cables, you got to consider where they're at the start and the bottom, and I'm assuming we're going to have to do a bridle, so it's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go up and then connect your beam above the flumes.
Time and money wouldn't do anything.
Well, I'm just throwing a fan at this.
Let's see why I poke a hole in the flume and put this cable up.
That'll work.
Make a jump.
Deep piano wire.
We'll just put realign the flume.
We can do that.
I'm just thinking, back to the idea of releasing fish more more in the baffle area and less around the corner. I can't. It would be nice to come up with something, some sort of test that we release fish at different locations and see if we get, you know, if there is a mortality associated with, along with the release point. But I'm not sure that we'd have to release a hell of a lot of fish to get, mm-hmm. you know, even though it seems like, you know, it seems like we've got a hell of a lot of high mortality. We're pushing a lot of fish through that.
Yeah. Another concern about that is those fish not coming from the brail, going back into the brail because they don't know that, you know, they haven't experienced coming out of it, so they might want to go back into it.
Yeah. Hard to say. So, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how you test that, different release points or whatnot, unless they're holding up somewhere or something. There's some other issues in there that we can look with a Ditson or something like that. We just can't. We couldn't sample enough fish and test enough fish to, yeah. to get any sort of significant numbers on.
We'd have to do it over years, probably.
Yeah. Too. So, I'd be real curious where the shad are coming from. You know, if we've been 1,500 fish on the trash rack and the shad, are those fall back from the main ladder, or is that more of the shad that are in the holding pool that each night that yeah. we take down? And we, if I recall, we open up the gate and we basically run that ladder up through the exit. You know, so are those. Where are those shad coming from?
That'd be an interesting experiment. Eat some red and some blue. And
well, one of the things I put on here under actions was monitoring, and you know, do we want to stick around the ideas of sticking a video camera or a Ditson in at specific locations to try to capture, you know, some answers to these kinds of questions? Shad, you know, lamprey falling back into the mm-hmm. area, and salmon. And try to get some, mm-hmm. you know, behavioral information.
Oh, that'd be good.
So, like, look out at the exit ladder?
Yeah, maybe, you know, at the transition from the ice harbor exit section to the shallow, you know, exit section of the lab itself, maybe that would be a strategic location for some kind of monitoring equipment. And then at the exit from the half ice harbor to the main ladder, I see is another spot. And maybe fish field unit could help us out with that or something.
What about the baffle, the interaction with the baffle? That's what I'm curious about is how
that
those
too.
Smaller
yeah.
fish approach that baffle. And it, are they actually actively trying to go through that orifice section, or are they just rejecting it completely? Mm-hmm. And then how will they interact with that overflow section?
Yeah. I mean, so it seems like we should be able to do some monitoring or whatnot, maybe not study, you know, but maybe get some of the Ditson or some of the camera work in there, or just physically monitoring. Like I can imagine, you know, maybe I'll put in my calendar next year of going out there a couple times when we take the system down and just observe how the shad, you know, do they just back down partway down the ladder and then we open our gates and we put it into the other, to the bypass mode, and then they start coming back up it. I mean, because if we've got the upper part of that ladder shut off, then we just really screwed ourselves there because they're not going to get out. You know,
yeah.
Or do we need to back them all the way down the ladder before we, you know, so we get most of them out back in front of the picket leads before we, you know, turn that around into bypass mode.
Hasn't it been a number of years that there wasn't any shad, though?
This last year was a good year. I mean, a couple of years before that, we were a million or one, yeah. less than a million or one. One
yeah,
one,
but
two.
Then, but like 3 or 4 years before that, we were in years
oh,
at
yeah.
least
I mean,
as high as this or
I mean,
higher.
Yeah. yeah,
the record years. And then back when U of I was back there, well, Griffith's been sampling the whole time, so yeah.
Yeah, there's just some years with more than others.
They were on a decline. I mean, except for last year, I mean, they've been steadily declining up from a peak of, I think, 5 or 7 million you know, a number of years ago. So maybe we were, I don't know, whether we were sampling that intensely then or we just had so many fish, we just figured, chalked it up to the number of shad in the system. And just that, that's the way it is. I remember those times because you were always complaining about the picket leads and the drain.
87.
Yeah. That it was always plugged.
That's why we went with the center leads.
Way back then.
So we didn't have mortality then, which
hey, maybe we should bring those back.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up a question. You know, is there something that we can do to reduce the picket lead time in the main ladder, yet still accomplish our sample goals? You know, if we divert less fish,
I knew I had to come to this meeting.
If we could do something to divert less fish into the lab, include, you know, shad, lamprey, and salmon, you know, less exposure to a stressful environment.
Well, you could in theory block shad from getting into the trap just by closing down the overflow weirs, you know, and just the flow through the orifice. But I think our concern is that without a path forward, they're just going to plug the lower end of the ladder
for like 4 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of shad come through there.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you could, in theory, we could adjust the ladder and just make it orifice passage there. But my concern is that might screw up your sample if we have
so
I think 10 or 12,000 shad sitting in the lower end of that.
Plus, it's a biased sample in that you only have orifice migrating fish. And, I don't know.
Well, the other idea I had in the past was, you know, if, you know, of course, it'd be a major refit, but if we had a trap and hold type scenario in the AFF where, okay, we need 100 fish for the day, you know, because the number of fish going through the facility relative to the number of fish we sample, I think, you know, 90% of them probably bypass just because it takes time to sample each fish. But if we could trap and hold our 100 fish for the day, you know, we lift the pickets and it takes us however long to go through our fish.
How fast do you think, how long do you think it would take to trap and hold enough fish for CritFic and UOBI? I mean, is it even possible, is it realistic to think that we could, you know, cut the picket lead time in half or something substantial?
Yeah, I mean, once the runs pick up, I mean, and that's when we have our biggest problems is when we have high fish density.
I would say what you do, you've got a count window down there on the entrance to that. You could just go down and if you needed 100 fish, what I would do is I'd load 200 or 300 in there and then shut it. And so you'd be guaranteed.
Well, we still have that problem of, you know, even if you load it with 300, you know, when we're sending fish in, you know, how do you stop them from continuing through?
Well, I'd just hold them up. I'd hold them up in the pool.
Right, but I mean, as soon as you turn on the flumes,
well, you just
start flying through.
Meter them through with
three or four.
Meter them through with the false weir.
Turn it off.
Turn it off.
Use only one.
Or squeeze the entrance gate. You're gonna get, you know, two or three at a time, but you know that's why you need 100 fish and we're loading it with 300. My concern is the last 50 fish that don't want to go through the false weir that, you know, that's why I don't want.
And then the other one we run into is, you know, species composition changes through the day.
Mm-hmm.
They start out in the morning and, you know, you end up with a bunch of steelhead, you know, in the first 2 hours, and then later you have fish enough.
Well, that's what, I mean, it's possible. I've talked to Gary about that, but I mean, you could manage that.
But I like the idea of
you
trying
could
to
open
keep
that.
Shad out of there.
Yeah, especially if they're going at a different time
and
of day.
Actually, going back to the sea lion group, weren't shad affected by the frequencies of the sea lion acoustics?
I thought they might have been one of the fish that.
Yeah, so.
We didn't care.
I think everything was affected.
Everything was affected.
If the guys I work with on the East Coast can hear us,
we can use a shad acoustic deterrent at the
I've made that
fishway offer. Entrances below the dam. Keep the shad out of the fishways.
I guess what I'm saying, you know, I mean, maybe it's a longer term, but we do have the window there that we do have the ability to open and close that, you know, and if it's, you know, a few hours in the morning, we preload it with so many hundreds of fish, and maybe come back at 10 or 11 when you know you have a different composition of fish and open it up again to get, I mean, we cut down the number of shad coming in there, definitely.
Yeah.
But it's more intensive. It's more active management of your trap than just having it open and running it for 6 hours and bypassing what you don't want. So but we'd have to go back and take a look, make sure that window and any of the gates, I guess they're all set. But
you might have to bring the window cleaner back.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a brush there?
No. There was never a brush there, and we took out the gate stuff. There was a little metal box that sat in there, and we cleared that out, so there was a straight shot for fish to get in. But, I mean, modifying that isn't going to be that difficult.
Yeah, it would be more of a long-term. Mm-hmm. But it would be inactive.
Yeah. But, I mean, right now we only have the 4 hours of pickup lead time anyway, so. Yeah, I don't know that it's...
Two-hour groups or 1 4-hour group?
Depends on the number of fish. So when that's for so long, it's, you know, 4 hours straight, and then it's raising and lowering depending on how many fish.
I'd just be really curious when we take down that pool, when we go to shut down, we take down the holding pool, and we're draining the ladder back into the downstream of the picket lead so we can open it up and bypass everything up there, whether the shad or... You know, as we start lowering the water, if they're moving, actively moving, and we're clearing all of them out, then we open it up and, you know, there's not that many in there, or if they're all still struggling to get to the upper end.
Right.
You know, that would be an interesting, because that may be where a lot of our shad are coming from. They're just basically stuck in that area, and then when we bring it up the next morning, they're kind of back down again and stuck in front of the drain. Because
it seems like a lot do enter the holding pool. You see them circling around and then coming into the lab too from the lower part of the ladder.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot in the ladder and in mm-hmm. the holding pool there. You get a lot in there. So.
Well,
I mean, short of, I think this is one of Gary, short of trying to build some sort of trap to remove shad without biasing your sample in there, something like the net system that they do with the valves capture shad in the top part of the fishway. But I mean, that was. He's always, I don't know, he's joking about it or whatnot. He's using the AFF as a
mm-hmm.
As right. to remove shad from the system, you know.
Which, I mean, we'd have a place for it when the Yakima tribe's been wanting to collect shad for their sturgeon project. The last several years, except for they didn't get their paperwork in one time. But anyways, I mean, they wanted to, you know, dip out of the, you know, the AFF or somehow get their hands on shad. That's something we could do after we're done sampling. You know, wait an hour or two and then allow them to dip shad. Or come up with a net system or something.
It's just the bycatch that's going to be an issue. It'd be nice if you could figure out a way with that overflow. If only shad went over that overflow and salmon used the orifice, and you could just have that overflow section going right to a shad trap or something. If salmon weren't using it.
Yeah, you can't trouble as you can't say always. I'd say
the bycatch is where it's a big problem.
99% of the time, the shad don't use the weirs. It's only, you really only see that when we load the ladder heavy. You know, so when we get 30,000 fish a day, that's when I see them going over the weirs. But beyond that, you know, they don't use the weirs that much. Use a lot of the orifice. I think you could go back and look at the early pit tag orifice work in there, because they were looking at how many of how many orifices, how many times would a salmon go through the orifice before going over the weir.
I think it depends on spring run versus fall run, kind of those things. But Gary was saying that shad prefer the overflow over
they
the
do.
Orifices.
Yeah, the orifice will stop them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got to have streaming flow. They don't even like plunging flow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, if it drops and plunges, they won't. They're, not that they won't go over it, because they go over the false weir. I mean, that's a plunging flow up there, but it really slows them down. The same with the orifices. But if you can get a streaming flow, they'll swim up it. Unfortunately, a streaming flow is a salmon will swim up it too. So
yeah, I know.
I
don't
know how you get around that. So I don't know, and I don't know what to say about lamprey, because I don't know where they're coming from.
They have to be falling back. Yeah, they're not going through the flume system, and they're not being sampled and released in the area.
I need to go up sometime and look at that entrance, because I just can't imagine all that. This number of fish falling back through that.
They might be falling back from the exit ladder, not
from the
bypass.
Yeah,
from the
half ice harbor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when they, you know, at night when they start moving, they move up into the AFF. You know, we know that by how well they trap in the AFF. And some of them, I'm sure, are getting by and then falling back into that area. And is the baffle creating a hydraulic environment that's stressful for shad or for lamprey? You know, again, raising that baffle out of the water. You know, might be helpful for lamprey that do fall back in that area at night.
Put a little mini LPS on.
What were the velocities up in that?
Yeah.
Up in that area, the flat area upstream of the baffle?
Two to 4 feet per second.
So it's not a. No.
It's a
stretch.
Mostly, it's within their maximum range.
Was that in sample mode or bypass?
Sample.
We did all our testing in sample, didn't we?
Yeah.
The bypass can be
slower. I was just thinking if they're falling back and they get in front of the braille, if there's a velocity barrier, not, you know, I don't know what baffle would create other than it pushes the velocities down.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, be able to attach to the wall or swim along the floor or whatnot, the velocities probably aren't that different.
They should. They should be fine.
So.
In the shallower, they're going to be velocities the same as they were before.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good attachment surface there now.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
So you're saying it's only 4 feet per second or anything?
10 to max.
2 to 4.
Oh, they should be able to handle that then.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing is, I mean, that's a long, well, relatively speaking, that's a long run.
Yeah.
At 4 feet per second, that can be a barrier. But if you can attach midway and hold,
take a break,
then you're doing okay. But it's not something you probably could swim that distance. Mm-hmm. Lamprey probably couldn't swim that distance.
I mean, one thing you could do is put a metal plate, you know, like they do at like John Day, they have all those plates that go just for something smooth from the attach to all the way up through it.
Yeah. Along the wall, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Talk to Sean, you might have some ideas.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of an uneven flow also through there, because it's got one bend and then got another bend and they're very abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So one side of the channel's not very fast, the other side it's.
Well, they usually prefer that. I mean, they can kind of.
Yeah, it seems like they'd have a choice.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it swamps sides. So now, if they're going to try to stay in the low side,
now
they have to go across the...
That's a good point.
So, you know, they're not the strongest swimmers in the world to be able to do that.
Be interesting to see, because they had that radiometry study going on, how many tagged fish actually tagged lamprey went through there.
Yeah.
The proportion that made it through. I bet it's pretty high, because I haven't heard of any. Had there been any radio tag lamprey that had been found dead?
I don't think so.
Just when I reported that?
Maybe one.
There might have been one.
I think there was early on.
I mean, to the extent that we shut the entrance gate down a certain amount, I mean, we reduced the flows in there. We'll have to look at the weirs and make sure we still have, you know, streaming flow of the weirs. So
Shad, well, that's the way they are on the normal operation. It's right. Kind of streaming.
Yeah, but if we shut down, you know, if we shut the entrance gate
right,
down,
if we cut it back,
you know, that we don't lose that streaming.
Do you remember what it looked like, John, when we cut it back last fall?
When we cut what?
When we cut back the gate opening between
the exit ladder and
Vice Arbor and the main ladder.
I think we reduced some. We reduced some flow through there.
We did.
Yeah.
And it still looked open. Well, it may have been more plunging flow in that case when we did that, but it was had enough. It had ample head on the weirs.
Yeah.
Okay. But it probably wasn't as much streaming flow.
We want to look at that because we want Chad to get. Well, I don't know. If we're halfway down there, they're not going to get out the end anyway. Really. If we make that
right
that exit gate an orifice, they're not going to go out that. They're going to be really reluctant to go out that. But we will reduce the flow in that exit channel, and we can adjust it with the valve 15, and so Lamprey should be able to swim out the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just that we're going to trap Shad. The Shad aren't going to get out. Unless we do something on that gate that has like an overflow undershot gate. You know what I mean by that?
Like yeah,
it's
yeah.
Kind of a split gate that actually goes down. say your slot's 5 foot deep and the gate's 2 foot and it goes a foot under the surface, so you get an overflow cascade and you have both. That might give you Shad exit. Ability for Shad to exit it. But I would think that we'd be able to observe that. If we try that and we set up and we go up there and look before we set it up, and we get reports that the Shad are just stacked up at that end, then we're going to know that the operation is working. We just need to modify that gate, that leaf.
Or then we open it up to collection.
Yeah.
Would that be it? You can get in there.
You mean dip them out of that? Yeah. Dip net them out of that?
Yeah.
It's always, you know, it always is, you know, a bycatch issue.
Especially sockeye.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you got to make sure that the impacts from dipping those shad are going to, the benefits of that are going to outweigh if you didn't do it kind of situation. So, you know, we're seeing the effect of shad. How big is that now? How big is the impact of you dipping those shad and catching salmon, which one's bigger? And you'd pretty much have to make it a pretty small impact on your bycatch to make it up.
But you probably have to get thousands a day.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got a pretty good chance of finding some salmon in there.
But I mean, that might be a modification if we observe it. I'm not recommending that we go out wholesale modify anything right yet. But
we should observe it this next year. More monitoring.
But I do like it if you guys are thinking of making that steel this year and trying that, because I can't figure out another way of cutting the wood and maintaining it and still having a slot in it. So, sort of steel plating it to begin with.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. You guys are making it on steel. You can make it so it has some kind of a variable weir, then you end up with everything you want. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a set of guides built into it that we can
stack stuff into it or
whatnot, change it as we need it.
Right.
That ought to work. Well, at least it gives us something to test, something to try.
So with that said, that does bring up a question I've got is, so we gave a maximum of 18 by 12 for that. Sorry, I'm designing it.
Yeah.
So minimum, I think we were talking 6 inches overflow.
Yeah.
And how narrow can I make it for shad?
12?
Yeah, that's it.
That sounds pretty good.
Here's what I'm thinking is I'll make it make a slot, have the weir the 6x12, and then if we need it bigger, we can just torch it out. Sort of thing.
Okay, you're gonna go that way or make it 24x24, and then
you'll have a 24x24 slot.
Okay,
and then a gate
that slides we can put in there.
Yeah. Okay, our baffle only goes down 18 inches underwater, doesn't it? And then how much did we go above the water? We went at least a foot above, right?
I don't remember what we ended up with. I got to look at it again.
So you got to make sure we have some baffle on it.
Again. Well, I look at it and make it appropriate.
So what would you say is the maximum depth of the water? 12 inches?
12 inches is what I got.
That's so that would leave 6 inches.
We'll have some variation on the depth for that raking criteria that we're talking about and how many shad are piled up, so you may have a little bit of a range there to work with. Another thing I would say too is if you're talking about torch and steel.
I was joking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Make sure it's
sand.
Probably
want to
have a solid plate
we've
drunk in the tube just in case none of this works and we want to go back to what
right.
we got.
Yeah.
Or a plate that matches the baffle.
Right,
the
configuration.
The baffle's
a cross plate, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when we do this, we can have a stack of, you know, three or four different options we can slot in and out and play with and see what happens. Yep.
Right. That'd be easy to do.
Yeah.
Well, the only problem is getting them in and out because you're going to be reaching out over the channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, access is it's possible.
Well, you did pick the easier side, because from the baffle side, it would get, or from the braille
it's
side.
Impossible from the braille side.
So, I'm appreciating that.
Yeah. I don't remember whether there was access. I mean, yeah, I kind of remember having to reach for a chain fence and...
Yeah, some netting right in there.
Yeah.
Then you could access it.
Okay.
You got to crawl over.
I remember getting to that fence.
Yeah. On the next door.
The other topic that we have is we look like we're all kind of reaching a wall if I'm not sure. So your Acum 5 there was, we've all noticed that observation box, the recovery box, whatever you're calling it. That whenever you dump one half the water with the fish, that centered above reflects an awful lot. And we have concerns that its life may be limited at that. So we're going to recommend putting an aluminum plate in there. It'll probably be the same thickness, but without a lot more strength.
Yeah.
And
what's it now?
It's the
HUD.
So I guess, is there any other observations on the observation box? It's like baffled by the baffled. But anybody has concerns about that? That's the only thing we noticed on that. It seemed like everything else was working pretty all right.
Yeah, everything else seemed to work pretty good.
Were they useful? Really?
Yeah. We put most of our fish through them.
Really?
Did you successfully save the species?
Who knows?
I mean, it seems like.
There's less sample mortality.
It seems like there's less sample mortality. Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, we're basically right where we've been at.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've had 3 to 5 fish, you know, 3 to 5 dead fish per year for the last 5 years.
Well, I thought initially you were planning on just doing like a subsample. I was under the impression it'd be like 1 out of 10 or something like that going through there.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is I didn't want to, you know, have to put every fish through.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because then that slows up the sampling.
You know, right.
It actually works efficient enough to where you put a fish in, it's slowly recovering while you're sampling the next fish.
Oh, okay.
By the time you load the second fish.
So it wasn't as hindering as you originally thought, so you guys went ahead and used it. Okay.
Yeah, it actually looked really smooth.
We're not using it as much now because the supply water temperature seems to be fairly high.
Mm-hmm. 37 degrees.
Yeah, so, you know, we're putting fish right into the brown pool now.
Mm-hmm. Any
we built two of those boxes, but we only mounted one because, again, there's only so much real estate out there. Is there any, what do we do with that other one? Do we continue to leave it, sit there in storage for backup, or do we mount that sucker somewhere?
The real estate issue, I think, is what we had. Three groups in there, and so we don't have to just have use one.
I mean, from what I've seen, I don't see that going in.
Yeah, I don't see it getting any better. Right. Organ in line.
Right. Yeah.
And part of it is that the Washington sampling and the U of I sampling is a trap and a remove, so then they would go back into
right.
the system. So
yeah.
No. Put it in the notes and we'll see what happens.
It might be a lot of ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the ones. Oh, that's my question. Well, you guys can monitor in here.
Yeah, and it's not required at this point.
Well,
we can monitor in the tank.
So we'll put the divider wall on both of them and use the other one as a spare.
Yeah, we fix both of them.
Yeah. Sounds like a no-brainer.
I don't know what would ever go wrong with that one, but it sounds like a pretty good one.
Oh, there was another issue. We need to talk about the flap thing. Are we going to fix that? The flap that's killing the mini jacks?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
Okay.
That's
on that switchboard.
Yeah. They've had a handful, four or five fish. They report that they find them and they're all stiff, so it appears that mini jacks are coming down the flume. Needs to have some sort of, the guy up top needs to recognize that, or I don't know how else, build it.
I've also
sort of flap differently.
On the switch gates themselves, they're not like sweeping well enough, so mini jacks will get stuck underneath.
Okay.
And that could be part of it.
Is that a seal issue or
just
neoprene?
I think it's just a neoprene. Is worn or permitted that the gates aren't
right.
So you may want to take a look at that.
Would a brush work better?
You know, those switch gates is something that's not reflected in, you know, the reporting for that matter is those switch gates, they do impact fish. You know, we've observed people missorting, and I don't know if there's something that could be done there, but it seems like an antiquated switch gate.
Well, it's one of those Murphy Law things, you know, if you have a system that can fail, it's going to fail, and that's one of them, and the, you know, relying on personnel to keep these mini jacks safe, too, is another one where people will fail. I'd say for that, we at least put some kind of material that's it's not going to fail, so they you don't have to rely on people to think about it. And that other issue, I mean, that's like a redesign issue. So we've tried going down that road before, and it just seems like we can never get anything in time for the next year. So you know, that's kind of on you guys. We'd support fixing something like that, but
something lightweight and actuated in a different manner, and much faster.
Well, I think you know. First of all, I think maybe the project needs to when we shut down, you can get out there and take a look at those gates and just you know, do we need to. The seals on those gates wear. I mean, as much as we're using them and whatnot, the soft neoprene is tends to be a better thing. It's because it is soft, and those brushes can be pretty stiff. You know, if you're sweeping, you can almost descale fish sweeping with a brush. So the neoprene is actually better, but it wears faster. So we just need to keep on top of it.
And better material out there.
And whatnot,
or tougher material.
Back of the brush is what we typically got, and it tends to get into to get it stiff enough to actually move the fish. You have to basically pry the scale. I mean, it's a problem.
It's a trade-off. Huh?
Yeah.
Any better neoprenes out there that maybe tougher than?
They keep claiming they're tougher, but I haven't really seen much improvement.
It's
the same issue of if you get it tough enough to last longer, then it's too tough for the fish. So
We've sampled a lot of different neoprene over the years out there. It would have been a test facility for neoprene.
You get that report written now?
The only thing I can hope is the design is that it's easy enough to you can just pop it out, put a new seal on, just drop it back in, and just
use the soft stuff.
You know, it's easy to replace whether you do it on an annual, on a yearly basis, or whether it's every 6 months or whatever. If it's going to wear, just make it easy that we can take it out. And, you know, it's not a 2-day job to unbolt things and do it up. I mean, there are different gates, you know, different methods of moving fish like that. But it's like Trevor said, it's kind of a complete redesign of the facility. Elevations is what we're going to run into. If we come out the bottom or come out the side with like a side dump or something like that and whatnot, it becomes a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
At some point here, if we get too far into that, we're going to have to step back and do the ER and figure out the whole system of
right.
Instead of right now we're playing with the baffle and playing with that. I think that's all right. But
yeah.
And we're making improvements, but yeah, there's only so much room out there and only so much you can do, and that would need to be studied before we just start modifying things.
Yeah, I think if you got anywhere of doing the flumes, modifying the flumes, other than the bypass flume, yeah, I think that's fairly easy. But the flumes themselves, the sorting flumes. I mean, we've got some room out there, but it's just not...
Not where it needs to be.
Not where it needs to be. I was thinking of the bypass pipe. This occurred to me. I wonder, do we have enough head if we went? Could we run that bypass pipe and actually put the fish back into the ladder as opposed to the exit? I mean, we'd have to penetrate the ladder wall.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
All we need across there.
Or yeah, I think there's the water is higher on the other side.
Yeah.
We could check that, but I can look at the drawings. The drawings would tell me right off.
Yeah, I know. Because we start climbing up that exit ladder again to meet the ladder pool. And
they're shorter. They're 1-foot intervals, but they're shorter pools, so they can kind of catch up.
Deeper.
I guess the other question is if you could do it because of elevation, you'd be dumping them into a pretty small area, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, the pools are fairly large.
They're 24 feet wide, so, I mean, if it were doable, it would be a good idea.
You know, just side dump them into the back into the ladder.
The main ladder.
Okay. But I'm not sure whether elevation wise we could
be tight. Yeah.
I had Steve Rainey look at that a few years ago. We had him look at this for ideas for improvements to the AFF, and he looked at that and didn't think it was doable.
Yeah.
There just wasn't enough elevation there.
That was my fear.
Get it over for the necessary slope.
We'd have to get it up higher off the flume and.
We'd go back to that transition and make it not so steep and just go straight through the wall over the pool.
I think the water
is actually higher on the other side.
You could run them downstream, I mean, but you're talking a lot of penetration.
That's a lot of penetration.
It's a lot of walls of concrete. If you went, I mean, you're running, the more you go downstream, I mean, the ladder keeps dropping out from underneath you. But at some point, we have several hundred feet of bypass flume and several penetrations on
two penetrations
concrete.
Of course, you go out
there
one opening, but
I don't know. It was just one step less. I mean, they're just boom in the ladder as opposed to getting into an intermediate ladder where they have to go up and then exit. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to work. So we got some ideas.
Yeah, we definitely have some stuff to chew on here and talk about. And we've got Fitter Week coming up. I think it's September 5th. We can talk more.
An all day Fitter Week, I heard.
Yes, there's some special meetings for the B2 AWS Trash Rake and FGE.
in the afternoon.
It's going to be a good one.
Hey, you guys are going to be there all day, John.
Oh, yeah. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up here?
Nope.
Okay. Well, Tammy, I'm sure will send us some notes, and I'll take a look at it, and we'll identify some actions, and come up with a plan.
Okay.
We don't have the name of the DFF.
What's the D?
The Dead Fish Facility.
Did I thought that was funny. I said something to him today. I said it's the new name, the DFF.
Every day I open my inbox and there's another one.
There's one waiting for you.
All right.
There's another one.
61. Number 61. Oh. Sweet. We have fun. Taking pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just because we're looking
the zombie fish.
I mean, to a degree, but I remember Jen and I mentioning that and talking about that.
Yeah,
and so when they'd be done sampling, we would go out there and because we figured people weren't recording them and we would use it to notice. And then in the winter, when they would be able to be there, of course we'd have dead fish and we would be watering them. But we were looking. So, I mean, whether we recorded them all because they were so deep.
You know, I would.
I have a
Bible in the fish field. If we're seeing, if it's not a ladder, if it's not a trap issue, if these fish are dying in the trap or something like that, we got a whole lot of fish in the ladder, dead in the ladder.